Hello and welcome to another podcast with Vendorprolog and talking about the news. And it's the fourth today, it's the Thursday. We're recording this one a bit earlier. And today we have got...
Sam from Vendorprolog.
Jilly Jenner, I live in Ventnor.
And Jonathan Bacon from St Helens.
And today we've got broadly three subjects. The first that might be worth kicking off with is news from today, which was the PFI and the awarding of a considerable amount of money, apparently thumbs up from the government, £364 million quid over to be paid back over 25 years or to be spent 20, over 25 years?
25 years, yeah.
I mean, what's the roads, as we know at the moment on the island, are less than great. You know, potholes everywhere. And even before the trouble that we've had with the winter, it's been a common complaint that the roads of the island really have not been up to it. So I guess the council would say that they've listened to that and they've gone out to get the money. Now, this started with Joe Duckworth, didn't it? He was the one who pioneered this, from my memory. Is that right, Jonathan?
I think so. It's certainly been running for years and it's still got another 3 years to run until the project actually starts. It's 2013 that before any of the work actually starts being done. So my understanding is that, you know, it's things could change after the election, and it's good news so far, and it will be good news if it happens, but it's still not absolutely definite.
So what was it that they said about the PFI, Sam? What was the announcement today?
The announcement today was that, yes, they've been given the green light by the government with an additional £40 million from they'd previously put in for. But it covers a huge amount of different items. It's not just the roads itself, and a lot of roads will just be repaired rather than being rebuilt, but Boulder Road in Yarmouth is going to be, I think, rebuilt, which is quite a substantial undertaking. But it's there's a long list of all the other things included, which is bridges, retaining walls, verges, streetlights, replacement and maintenance of traffic signals, street furniture bollards, CCTV network and control room, street cleansing, just to name a few of the things actually included in this whole PFI scheme.
Yeah.
Interestingly, we had some comment from Mike Stark today on the announcement.
Never one to be keen on the PFI, is he?
And he's claimed that what's been said is that each year the council will have to pay back around about £11 million. Well, that will go to the PFI contractor who's doing the work. And the council say that is what they spend each year on road maintenance at the moment anyway. Mm. But he claims that based on the figures released by the council, between 2001 and 2006, the average spend was £4.4 million a year, and between 2006 and 2009, it was £2.8 million. In addition to that, apparently about a year ago, Stuart Love said that it's £5.5 million. So there's all these different figures being bandied about, and it's really quite difficult to get a grasp on who's telling the truth. You know, why is there such a discrepancy between all these figures? And a lot of people are very concerned that this £11 million figure is something that's not going to be sustainable, really, for the council to pay out to another contractor for 25 years, year on year.
It's £11 million plus cost of living, what's that called? Inflation.
Yeah.
On a cumulative basis.
All the financial brains here this
evening. Yeah,
exactly. They're right on top of it. But they, my understanding is they got the first call on finances. So before they spend money in other areas,
right,
it has to go to pay off this PFI money.
Right.
Is that something
at the cost of other, like, social services and education.
Yeah. Yeah. Like they're the first debtors. Which, I don't know, sounds a bit worrying, really. If we're at a point where we're cutting 11.6 this year, what do you think, Jenny?
Yeah.
It's not free money. Mm. You know, it sounds great having this money towards our roads, and we certainly really need it. This winter, you know, we've seen so many potholes, and it's really shown up the very poor state of our roads. But although it sounds great, it's not for free. We're going to have to pay for it. I, probably like quite a few other people, did a back of the envelope calculation, and I think the council are talking of that they have in the order of 500 odd miles of road. So if you tot up what the government's sticking in and what the council say they're going to put in very broadly, that's over £550 million, which works out about £1 million per mile of road.
Yeah.
You've got to wonder what they're going to spend it on. And I think I don't want to be a naysayer about it, but I'm really concerned that we will end up with people, because they're committed to spend it, they will spend it. Mm. And they're committed to providing the money to a private contractor. And the contractor's interest is to spend the money as well. Mm. And I want to see what we've got maintained and improved to the kind of benefit of all road users. And that's not just the car drivers, it's also the cyclists and the pedestrians who bring money into our economy, as well as make it good for us to kind of move around the island. But what happens, once they've kind of done those maintenance and improvements, where's the rest of it going?
Mm. Yeah.
There's no talk about all the, we've only mentioned Boulder Road in terms of something that needs rebuilding. So, and what happens if things go wrong 10 years, 12 years down the line?
Mm.
I mean, I was looking today at PFIs in general, and they haven't been without their problems, where PFI companies have overextended themselves and taken on too many contracts, or they've kind of done a deal and sold them on to somebody else, and it's really concerning.
Mm. I think the concern is it going to work? If it does work, I think it will be very, very good, because they've got 7 years to improve all the roads that are covered by the project and bring them up to the defined standard. And as Sally said, that includes the street lighting, everything from the outside edge of pavement on one side of the road to the outside edge, sorry, the inside edge of the pavement on the other side of the road. 7 years to do that, and the project lasts 25 years. And the duty after the roads have been brought up to standard is to maintain them and hand them back in the fully improved state. And I think that can only be a good thing, but the concerns are always, is it actually going to work? Is there going to be some mess up at some point with the chosen contractor? Having been to a few talks about the contractual process of bidding and what all the steps they have to go through to actually get this thing, which is why there's another 3 years for it to go, it's amazing what has to be gone through. The checks and balances are frightening if you just look at them all spread out one
over
the other.
It's frightening for the people bidding.
It's frightening for me trying to understand it.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult to understand, and I think part of the problem with this, as many things, is it's just been badly explained throughout, and there's a natural reaction to spending this massive sum of money in advance for something that people don't understand what it is, how it's going to work. But I think there are some very real fears there. If it works, it will be brilliant. A particular concern of mine has been that it affects the public highways that the council currently maintain, but there are a lot of roads on the island that are unadopted roads. I'm in St Helens next to Bembridge, and Bembridge has a massive problem at the moment with roads that are basically dirt tracks, and you hear someone damaging their car, getting injured almost every week. Mm. They are all excluded from the process.
Right.
And I think that's been set in stone from almost day one when this project was first discussed and the ambit of it set. And I think that was very short-sighted.
They're private roads, aren't they?
They're not private. The private road, okay, you have to seal off one day a year. To maintain its private status. There are a few of those around, but it's generally a private road that has ceased to be private, but the council has not, quote, adopted it and tarmacked it. But it's unclear who has a duty and what that duty is in respect of any road.
Mm.
But the council basically says we could do things about them, but we don't have to. And as such, they've excluded them from the PFI.
Right.
Mm. So that's my particular concern.
That seems a bit odd, doesn't it, given that there's this big pot of money and that everyone seems to want to, or will be gaining from it, to exclude those roads, which, even though there's a lot in Bembridge, I can't think there's any in, there may be one or two in Ventnor, I can think, of unmade roads, but generally it does seem weird not to be inclusive with it.
Quite, driving in today, quite a lot of the roads in Ventnor seem to be fairly unmade.
And if you go around St Lawrence, you know, I mean, you've got roads like Old Road. I think it's Old Park Road that's been absolutely churned up by them sending a double-decker bus round there at one point, when it's patently not designed for that kind of weight of vehicle.
Yeah.
So there are plenty of roads that are a little more than rough tracks, adopted or no.
What about this, Gillie's idea of this overspend? If you've been looking at the PFI thing, is that something that can happen, that the contractor says, well, we've got to look like we're spending £1 million this week or this month or whatever it is?
I understand that sort of thing is taken account of in this sort of massive, goodness knows how big thick the contract's going to be.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I wouldn't like to speak on something I really don't feel clued up enough about, but I don't know how many people are clued up about it sufficiently. I'm sure the few people heading the project up know about it, but as I say, it's just the information coming down to people who need to understand it.
Mm.
It's like a lot of things in the council. It's not well explained. You leave people in the dark, and that's when you get queries and worries and people thinking that things are going to go wrong.
And
sometimes that does happen. Sometimes it's just poor explanation. Things are actually going quite well, which is a frightening thing to say sometimes, that the council does things well. But
they certainly do, don't they?
But, you know, if they didn't... It's just a particular gripe of mine. If they explain things a lot of the time... Just a road example, Brading Road up by Tesco, just outside Ryde, was closed, well not closed, but very difficult to pass for a lot of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
The road works there were supposed to finish.
What were they doing, relaying the kerbs then?
They were supposed to be just doing general work relaying the kerbs, but it carried on, apparently, because when they were doing that initial work, they found a load of collapsed drains underneath the road, which needed to be taken out and replaced.
Right.
People were moaning for months, why hasn't this work was supposed to finish on this day? Mm-hmm. If they'd actually told people, well, actually, we have to take out these collapsed drains, otherwise it would be pointless doing the work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think people would have been a bit more understanding. Mm-hmm. But they just see work carrying on for 2 or 3 months extra, whatever it is, and it gets people's backs up.
Well, and you had that horrific thing of actually having a traffic jam on the island as well, where people actually had to wait to get through that section because the traffic lights were... It was a single path through there, wasn't it?
When did you go off the last drive that way?
Well,
they're showing about 500 yards further down the road and they've got it again.
Have they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
They're doing all the beep shoot one. But it's an interesting point, actually, because we were discussing this earlier in the week, weren't we? Or was it over the weekend, about this lack of communication from the council and how it really be... so much to their benefit to communicate properly to people and explain situations. We were talking about Military Road and some information that we'd had, and won't go into the full ins and outs of it now, but after having a discussion with somebody and learning more of the background about the situation on the Military Road by Brook, where the landslide is, we were just left thinking, well, why haven't the council explained that to the public? Because then you wouldn't have people jumping up and down saying, why haven't you done anything about it, when they really understood the background to it. But it's I think there is this lack of communication. There's these people working there, putting out these press releases and working on the magazines and what have you, but I don't know if the right messages are being sent out.
Mm. I don't think they are, and it engenders a lack of trust amongst us, you know, in the electorate, as it were, because, you know, I think most people broadly like to see the roads improved, damage to their cars and all the rest of it, and yet you can't help but harbour suspicions when it seems to be all about spin and saying, oh, wow, we've got this, rah, rah, rah.
Yeah.
And if they were more open and saying we've got, you know, about what they've got to work through, the fact that there's all these issues to consider, it's going to take a long time to get to the point where they start spending because of that, and they want to do it carefully, you know, and learn the lessons from what's gone wrong on the mainland.
Yeah,
I think people would feel much more confident.
Right. It's a lack of openness, really, isn't it?
It is.
It's the fact of everything having to be filtered and controlled through comms that the humanness of the council seems to be lost.
Yeah. Well, with that particular press release, actually, the PFI one, which starts off with explaining that it's a free grant.
Yes.
And for a lot of people, they might not read past the first or second paragraph, and they might not consider the fact that, you know, it is actually going to cost us money. You know, fair enough, the government are giving a certain amount of money, but it doesn't mean there isn't any cost to the island at all.
Well, I think saying it's a free grant naturally makes you suspicious. And in what way free? There's no such thing.
Yes, there's
free,
no such thing.
But apparently we've got one of the highest levels of freedom of information requests in the country.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that one.
And it just all ties in. Right, with that sort of perceived attitude. And I found it one day. I wish I could find it again. There is a website out there which is just Freedom of Information Act requests.
What do they
against the Isle of Wight
do?
Council.
Oh, against the council?
Just against the council.
There's one called What Do They Know?
What Do They Know?
I think that might be it.
That's you can put them in through there, but I didn't know that the Isle of Wight was the highest.
I think it is one. I'm not saying it's the highest, I'm sure it's up there in the top 10.
I mean, one of the concerns I'd like to raise about the road improvements generally, and I know that it's actually quite a wide scope of what they're going to do. I think it's how you mentioned about signage and lighting and all the rest of it. And one thing that really strikes me, just walking around Ventnor, because that's the place I walk around the most, so I notice it the most, is the proliferation of signage, contradictory signage. Our streets absolutely littered with stuff, and there's, you know, if they can stick in traffic lights somewhere and all of these kind of things, it seems that it's done without much thought for the bigger picture. You know, and drive on the roads out through the island, one minute you'll be leaving, say, God's Hill, there'll be the sign saying you're now on national speed limits. You've hardly gone sort of a couple of metres, and then it's reduced the speed again, or it said slow.
Right.
And there doesn't seem to be much holistic thinking about the public realm and the impression this makes. And I actually read something on the blog in the last week. People were in Shanklin, apparently, were complaining because the council replaced the lovely, rather old-fashioned looking street lighting that kind of fits with Shanklin Old Town with modern stuff, which apparently comes up to the latest standards. But why does it people think, well, we are a tourist island, it's a huge part of our economy, let's just think about what we're putting up, what it looks like. Yes, it's got to meet the right standards and the right safety levels and all the rest of it, but let's make sure it looks right, and we join up the dots, and we're not contradicting ourselves, you know, sort of 2 miles or half a mile down the road. I mean, if you look at just in Ventnor alone, there's just every lamppost has got stuff on it. If it in PFI means that somebody actually goes around, thinks about this, and strips out all the rubbish stuff, and it's easy for us who live here, our visitors, that would be money well spent.
Worth 360 million quid.
Well, that's surely the money to do something rather than just doing the same old that we've done before. I think that looking at it positively, this is an opportunity for the council and for us as an island to really think about our roads, our public realm, and do something good with it.
Is that perhaps the role that highways will take? That they'll be overseeing the strategy of it rather than the execution of it, the daily execution?
Well,
I don't know.
It kind of sounds like it, because they're handing it over to a private contractor. They're keeping parking to themselves.
But following on from what you're saying, it'd be nicer if there was someone, whichever department or departments are involved in it, and I'm sure it's mostly highways, it'd be nice if someone was overlooking and saying, this is an island that relies on tourism, and part of people's complaints in the past about the island, yes, it's nice to come to, but I had to get my car fixed when I went home. I couldn't find what I was looking for.
Yeah. Have you actually found that with people staying, have you?
I find myself going to parts of the island I'm not so familiar with, and you find it a very... I mean, even again, moaning about my journey here this evening, but
yeah.
I was following signs to Ventnor out of Newport and thinking there must be a cross-country route that I'm not particularly familiar with I can take. And then Ventnor, yes, follow the sign, Ventnor, Godshill. I know it's on the way, but someone who is coming to the island for a week suddenly...
Where's Ventnor?
I don't know where to go.
And
it would be nice to just have that sort of overview. Let's help people visiting. I mean, the population of this place effectively doubles in the summer school holiday.
Yeah.
And, you know, to have them all bonding around, getting annoyed because they can't find what they're looking for, when they could be at those places spending their money and helping the economy.
And I don't know, it's causing accidents as well. Hesitant drivers, not knowing where they're going, the signs disappearing. And arguments over maps or whatever other stuff people get up to.
So everyone's in a bad mood by the time they get to the
That's true. The lighting came up in the council meeting, didn't it? They were talking. I think it was Councillor Giles was saying, I think he used the word only 13,000 lighting standards or whatever they're called. Poles with lights at the top of them over the island. And I've got a vague feeling he was saying that wasn't many, and that they were going to be integrating them with something to do with the mainland. I didn't quite understand how you do that, unless it was a contractor looks after all of them.
That arose out of the independent budget. There was a proposal. Ian Stevens was very much behind that. It was the sort of independent proposal of the budget alongside Jeff Lumley, and the suggestion was you don't actually need these lights on every hour of the night. Why not switch them off 2 a.m. till 5 a.m. 3 a.m. till 6 p.m. and you could make a significant saving, because there are a lot of lights out there and they cost so many pence to keep on a night, but for however many thousand it is, it adds up. It adds up to a phenomenal sum. And all the stuff you get about light pollution and so on, there's a sideline. This ties in with the PFI, because one of the responses to that, well, street lighting is something that will be looked at when the PFI comes in. That's 3 years away. We could be saving X thousand pounds for the next 3 years and doing something positive with it.
They were saying something that I think he said that the it would cost a lot of money to equip the lights to be able to turn off at night, and as you said, in 3 years' time it's going to be LED lighting coming in, and therefore the whole world's going to be...
Well, they're going to be using the CCTV unit. The control room is going to be looking after the lights in terms of seeing when it's safe to switch them off.
Ian looked into it a lot.
Yeah,
because obviously I know Ian. I work alongside him, and you know, we felt excuses were being made. And a little bit of effort looking into things like this could actually reap a lot of benefit. It's the same as Jeff Lumley's proposal about some months ago about reducing carbon emissions. Again, it's something that's sort of been said, we don't think, you know, it takes some time, it takes some effort to work it out. But if you could work it out, it's amazing what you could save.
Yeah.
And it's a lack of creativeness.
I think the other response was...
That sort of holistic approach you were talking about with the roads.
I think they said that they had got an electricity contract and that they were tied into it. It was another reason they gave, wasn't it? That therefore...
Well, I've got an electricity contract I'm tied into, but it still doesn't mean I have to leave my lights on all night.
Actually, that's one thing. I went to Beijing a year or two ago, and that's one thing that I found pretty impressive about Beijing, that they turn all the lights off in the streets. Because what's the point? You know, you've got car lights on already. Why bother having street lights on? Which I guess was what Ian Stevens' point was.
Yeah.
It would be nice, though, if I'd like to make a plea for the return of the cat's eyes in the middle of the road, because if you've got those, actually,
yeah.
and they're working, and they're not kind of smashed into the ground by heavy, by heavy vehicles, they work incredibly well to make you feel, you know, that you can see where you're going, it's fairly safe, and that's something that's pretty low maintenance when it's in.
Yeah.
And it you know, obviates the need to put in lots of extra lighting on dark roads and all that kind of thing. I don't know why they're not popular anymore. Someone suggested to me it's because the EU don't support them, but you know, I think there's a really good case for maintaining our cat's eyes.
I think it's Cat Protection League got involved. there's what's that road by the one that always crashes on by Amazon World? They've got cat's eyes there that actually emit light. So I guess they've got some LED lighting in there, that, so you don't need to have your lights on to see them. Which I guess it's probably because there's so many accidents along there.
Would it be all the people who are driving along without their lights on just so they can look at the cat's eyes?
Yes. Well, so PFI, good. Is that the good if well executed?
Good if it works.
Yeah, well, I'd agree.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't touched on, I think it's £7 million that the council is having to sink into bidding for the PFI. That's a non-returnable figure, isn't it?
I think it's £7 million so far, and it's going to be a few more by the time it happens.
And that goes into, they've got a project manager and a head of project and people who understand the PFI world and doing the contracts, I guess. So obviously that money, and this was said in the council chamber, that money will be lost if, one, they're not successful with the PFI, either because a change of government cancels PFI as an idea, or that there's a change of heart in Labour and they don't get the funding.
Well, it's the general fear with a lot of things at the moment that there are quite a few projects on the island where a lot of money's been put into it and then it's failed at the last minute, or after a lot of money has, as it turns out, been wasted.
Yeah.
And I think that again fuels people's cynicism, and means that what I was saying earlier, it would help if there was more understanding, more openness is maybe the wrong word, but just a desire to bring people on side. Or I suppose there is that desire, but to do it a little more effectively.
Yeah, I mean, that's what openness brings, isn't it? It brings trust. The confidence and trust of people.
Sounds like marriage guidance counsel, doesn't it?
Talking of marriage.
No, I'm taken, I'm sorry.
We're
very happy together.
The juggernaut, or the jalopy, whichever one you want to look at, that is PewTube, continues on to another week. Do you want to give us an overview of what was proposed on Monday, what you put forward on Monday, Jonathan?
Just in case anyone hasn't gathered, who's listening, of course, I said Jonathan Bacon, that's Councillor Jonathan Bacon, I'm one of the three, together with Councillor Welsford and Councillor Lumley, who put in a complaint on Monday. To consider whether Councillor Pugh, the leader of the council, has breached the code of conduct. We understand that will be considered formally by a panel, I think it's next Friday, and well, I do have to be a little bit careful. What I'm thinking is, am I in my official capacity now when I'm talking on this microphone, because
I don't think so.
We've had a news today that a private individual put in a complaint relating to David Pugh's admitted language, his outburst, whatever you want to call it, outside Cowes Yacht Haven on the night of February the 12th, and that has been rejected on the basis. He was not acting in his official capacity at the time, and therefore it's not being taken any further.
It's probably worth breaking down what the decision was today, that it wasn't the Ethical Standards Committee, it was a subcommittee that goes through and works out whether stuff should go to the actual committee first.
The assessment
subcommittee.
Yes, it's a sort of filter process.
Yeah.
And they are there to avoid complaints that lack any substance going any further. I've only seen really what's come out on Isle of Wight Radio today. Isle of Wight Radio suddenly publicised this decision. I'm not clear exactly when it was taken. I think it was last Wednesday or Thursday. And normally these would be officially published, I think it's 7 days later.
7 days, yeah.
That's the agreed protocol, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's a little odd that by whatever means this has come out today.
The day before.
Well,
is that tomorrow? Yeah.
Well, I don't know if it's 7 days or 7 working days.
It's 7 working days.
In which case,
apparently,
it would be next week.
Right.
Because that ties in with the other announcement today of Patrick Joyce took a complaint against Councillor Pugh over the Craven Court planning application, but we'll come on to that afterwards.
Yeah.
I mean, in relation to that complaint, it was rejected. I understand it related, as I've seen no detail about it, I understand it related purely to the swearing.
Mm.
Whether the determination of that complaint affects our complaint, I'm a little unclear on. Isle of Wight Radio have reported that it effectively knocks it out. We think there is more to it than will have been put forward by a member of the public who wasn't present at the event. But of course there are other elements to our complaint, in particular the allegation that this, in the aftermath of the event, efforts were made to cover up what had happened so there'd be no publicity about it. And I've found that since we, as it were, went public on Monday, a lot of people have come forward, and including witnesses, and said, well, actually, this is what we saw, and there's more to it. There are things going on inside.
Right.
I'm being a bit careful in what I say.
Sure.
There were things going on inside the event, which I assume that means this denial that it was in private capacity because it was outside of the car park would not apply to.
Yeah.
And frankly, they're more worrying, what I've heard. And if there is substantiation of those, they deserve to be put forward and considered. And even with the car park incident, which I think is, frankly, probably the... If there are three parts to this, what happened inside, what happened outside, what happened afterwards, the swearing is probably the least important of the three.
Right.
But even so, I think there's possibly more that hasn't been considered about that yet.
I mean, quite a few comments when the video came out on the blog were, is that it? So what? That was the reaction. I mean, lots of other people obviously had the opposite opinion and thought it was bad. But many people took that, well, what's all the fuss about?
Well, I guess the difficulty a lot of people have is not so much with him swearing or shouting expletives in an aggressive manner, is the moral stance he's taken against other people. And had it been one of the other councillors that had been filmed doing that, I think that David Pugh would have been down on like a ton of bricks,
right.
Asking them to consider their position.
Yeah.
Yes, well, I think the hypocrisy of it all is what sticks in people's throats. And I mean, there's been so many comments on the blog, you know, it's almost impossible to kind of keep track of them because it must be an unprecedented number.
It is, yeah.
Every sort of Pewgate story, there's just hundreds of people coming in. And I think that there is a bigger, aside from what happened and the reactions to it and, you know, and so forth, I think there's a bigger picture in that all of those comments really are, it's about our disillusionment with the people in power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen it in Westminster, it's here as well on the Isle of Wight.
Mm-hmm.
And what people see I think, is a smug despot who's supported without thinking by a Tory bloc vote.
I mean, you might think that. I couldn't possibly.
Well, I can say it. And, you know, look, you've got 24 Tories, 10 independents, one Labour, and five Liberals, or Lib Dems, or whatever they are now. And the Tories, basically, it doesn't matter what he does, you know, Tory policy, yep, tick it through. No sort of thinking for themselves and thinking this is about what the people who put us in power want. What's going to make their lives better?
I guess,
that's what I find really sort of frightening. That it's all about Pew's aggrandisement and keeping the Tories in power, and not thinking about what's good for the island. And I think there's a lot of people who feel like that. And I suspect that the Tories and Pew's kind of in a sort of coterie are going to get a bit of a shock eventually.
I mean, I guess what they would say is, we vote together because we discuss it in detail, and that's the United decision.
Sorry, I just got something stuck in my throat there. Carry on.
That's the United decision that we come to, and therefore, as we've all agreed it, then we're all going to vote with it together.
Yes, possibly, but even then, there, it just feels, just as a bystander, I'm not involved in county politics or anything like that, that sometimes people aren't allowed to have an opinion, you know, and this is the problem. I think sometimes when party politics and ticking the boxes of the party machine become all important,
right,
people lose sight of what's going to happen in people's lives. This is a small island, you know, they're not running Westminster, and we all have to put up with their decisions. And then seeing David Pugh having one rule for everybody else and another rule for him, everybody's saying, whoa, hold on, you know, this isn't right. And I think that's why there's been so much interest in this, and it's not going to go away no matter how much he scurries to cover it up.
I think, I mean, there's something that we discussed doing was writing to each of the Tory councillors and saying to them, what are we going to say to them? Something along the lines of, do you support the approach that David Pugh has taken, or something along those lines, because by them not speaking out, it's tacit approval of his behaviour. You know, private or not private, or whichever it is. They're not saying this is wrong.
Well, with the amount of media attention it's gained off the island now as well as on the island, I mean, a lot of people argue that the result of his actions has caused him bringing the council into disrepute. You know, because
never mind the action, but the subsequent
coverage that it's had, and now now, you know, going into private eye, and that will be picked up and go elsewhere. And
it didn't ever break nationally, though, did it? I mean, it's private eye, obviously, is national. It didn't hit the papers, which, you know, that's national coverage, really.
Because it didn't at the time doesn't necessarily mean it won't. Because it's probably not. Because it's continuous. It's not an over and done with in a week.
Yeah,
there's been complaints against it, and you know, there's further information coming in, and
it feels like it's just a juggernaut that's rumbling on.
Yeah,
and you've got to, I mean, we have potentially general election coming up, and you've got to wonder at what point does the Tory high command sort of think, is he going to lose us the Isle of Wight?
Yeah, well, certainly a good few number of people on the blog have said, I would have normally voted for Andrew Turner, and I won't if Pugh's still there, because I disagree with him being kept in place.
There is a theory, and there's theories about all these things always constantly, is that David Pugh is going to be sacrificed, is that they're letting him put his head further in the noose by not admitting this stuff, and he'll be the fall guy for the for the cuts in the budget, and it'll be sweep a new broom and wasn't that horrible what David got up to, and I don't know if it's true, of course, but you know, everyone talks about all these things constantly. But
when you say it's a theory, Is this your theory? Or
I've heard it spoken about.
I haven't heard this one, I must say. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Sounds like wishful thinking.
I was surprised because I hadn't really thought of it like that. Maybe because...
Well, isn't it a bit late? Shouldn't they have done that last week or the week before? Because otherwise, the fact that they've kept him in place and there's nobody's spoken out against him in the Tory party in public so far...
We've got the recent history of what happened with Andrew Sutton.
Mm-hmm.
And, no one said that, he's a horrible person, we want to get rid of him. Not that I know he is or isn't. But
David Key was quite vocal.
Well, he was latterly, but it wasn't at the time. It took them 2 years to decide that they didn't like him, didn't it? So, I don't know. I mean, I heard there was somebody really very senior within the Conservatives has himself reported David Pugh. Now, we don't know. We don't know. Because we won't hear about it until it becomes public. But
yeah.
It could be like...
That's going to be a little bit more subtle than three goons like Bacon, Wells from Lumsy saying, hey everyone, look what we're doing. But I think if we encourage... I must say, if we encourage that sort of thing, then even if we get shot down in flames, then it will have served some sort of purpose, just to get people to look at themselves a bit more. I mean, I was just picking up on 2 points. One to mention this point. One thing that's upset me is the attitude and the response. I can say it was... not in my official capacity, therefore I've done nothing wrong. I think anyone with half a brain would say, you have done something wrong. You have, even on the limited sort of very public information, you've sworn in an offensive manner. It wasn't so much the swearing, it's the manner in which it was delivered that really shocked me. And I didn't think it was him at first, because frankly I didn't think he had it in him to do that. But it was the aggressive manner and tone directed not to someone who's tried to come up in the street and pinch your handbag. Well, no, not handbag, because you wouldn't have a handbag, but, pinch your wallet. But it was directed at the partner of the MP.
Right.
Someone who deserves a bit of respect, whatever you think about that person's politics or
mm-hmm.
not.
Mm-hmm.
And someone who was a guest at an official function, a few steps outside that function, leaving it. And that is wrong. It's not right. It's the sort of behaviour that's being condoned these days. And any condoning of that is not good for just the general attitude of society. I understand that there are children going around the playgrounds in various schools in the island, and it's become a bit of a catchphrase.
Really?
Yeah. No. If someone asks them to do something or says things to them, this comes from children in high school, children of friends who are in high school, the children, that is, not the friends. It's a catchphrase.
Wow.
And
I haven't heard that.
If that is challenged, they say, well, it's all right for the cabinet member for schools to say it.
Wow.
And yet that sort of thing does not help, whether it's standards board or not.
To a teacher or to another pupil or...
I don't know. I the rumour is it's used teachers, pupils, just generally going around the playground, whatever. I don't have children in high school, and unfortunately it hasn't hit the primary schools yet. But... it's very public, it's out there, and if it's having that sort of effect, whether it's an official capacity matter, it's wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the point I thought of, just when Gilly was talking, is of course we've seen another councillor in the news this week, Adrian Whittaker,
mm-hmm.
Who has admitted an assault.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not attracting as much attention. It's a serious matter. I don't condone it in any way. Mm-hmm. He did a wrong thing. He particularly as he conflicted authority, and there's obviously an awful lot behind that domestically. Mm-hmm. But if you look at what he said in when questioned about it, he accepted he had done wrong.
Right.
I mean, he's going to suffer as a result of it. I don't know to what extent. But it's just a difference in attitude. Mm-hmm. Even though he has done something that is bad, is setting a bad example, is mistreating authority, not showing respect, however you want to say it,
mm-hmm.
There's a very great difference in how he responded to that.
He held his hands up and said...
How contrite he was. Yeah.
Right.
And I'm not going to use the word hypocrite, but I think David Pugh would have done... This wouldn't be rolling on if he had said, look, I'm sorry, this happened, it shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
And I apologise for my behaviour. I apologise to those persons who were there and anyone who was offended, either present at the event or offended subsequently by the fact this has been published. And I think people would have accepted it a lot more then. And it wouldn't have become this great rolling news story.
Yeah.
We probably wouldn't have ended up putting in a complaint, but it has rolled on, and as a result of that, an awful lot of things are coming out of the closet, coming out of the woodwork, appearing. People are starting to say things. People are starting to say, "Oh yes, and." And in a way, he's made it worse for himself.
Yeah.
Right.
I've got to say that hearing his statement on Isle of Wight Radio today, there were just undertones of na-na-na-na-na. It just sounded so childish.
Really?
I wasn't in an official capacity, so there.
Right.
You know, it was...
Let's get on with the important
just
things.
Please, step back, take a step back, consider what you've done, consider the way you've acted... And just, as you say, Jonathan, at least make an apology. I mean, he keeps rolling out this, I regret saying something that I wouldn't want to say in public.
I've already said I regretted it.
That's not enough for people.
It's not an apology, is it?
No. It's just shows total arrogance for the whole situation. That's my personal opinion, anyway.
Well, it's carefully selected words, isn't it, to make it... Because lots of people are then saying, well, he has apologised by saying that he regretted it.
Yeah.
Well, regretting something and apologising are not the same thing.
No, exactly.
I'm not trying to be a lawyer there. I think people know my background, but I can regret doing something and not apologise for it.
Yeah.
But I can regret something and I can apologise for it as well. And I'm afraid he's only done the former and not the latter.
I mean, some people have been saying, why has Andrew Turner been so quiet on this? Why hasn't he actually said something about the situation? I guess it's a difficult position for him, really, because it's his partner. But equally, I guess he doesn't really get pulled into it. What do you think, Julie? I mean, is it something you'd expect the MP to speak on?
He's in a hard place, really, there. And I can understand just not... him wanting to rise above the mire and not get embroiled in this. So I don't blame him for staying quiet. And I don't know him or his partner particularly, but they both, you know, haven't kind of got involved in any sort of subsequent public mudslinging, as far as I can see. And in a way, you kind of can't help thinking better of them for it.
Right.
You know, it's a hard call because they must be absolutely desperate to say something. But I think that David Pugh is probably doing it all for himself. They don't need to add any more.
That case of Adrian Whittaker, it is an interesting one. And it's been a theory has been put forward to us, or an idea, or an observation, that Adrian Whittaker was sitting at home in his house, not in a public space, but somehow the fact that he's a councillor, it hasn't actually gone to the standards board, I don't think, has it?
No.
He's been, the Liberal Party has be selected. I don't know what the equivalent of councillor
does. I think the situation is that, I mean, you've got this official capacity thing that everyone's wondering what it means now.
Mm.
But I believe, obviously having done a bit of research in the last week or so,
yeah,
that if there is a criminal conviction, it doesn't matter in what capacity it arose.
I see.
That is potentially a standards board matter.
Right.
If someone chooses to refer him, or he refers himself, or however it is put forward. But I'm not sure it's particularly appropriate to comment about the details of this, because it is still...
Well, the reason I was bringing it up was that the contrast between him being in his home and police being called for whatever reason...
Mm.
And or the police being there, and David Pugh apparently in a public space, in a car park in Cairns, and the confliction between those two, really.
Yeah, but it's. I mean, I think I'm publicly on record as saying this. And again, speaking to the three of us, if I can, it's this. Concerned about relying on technicalities rather than just accepting that something improper has occurred.
And was that was the driver for you to pursue the standards board stuff?
I think so, yeah. Just the feeling that someone who is to the eyes of most of the public who have witnessed this, heard about it. He was the leader of the council, attending an official event as leader of the council. He's announced by the chairman as present, the leader of the council is present this evening. He steps outside during an ongoing discussion with people involved, and then uses the language he used, 5 feet, 10 feet, 20 feet outside, whatever it was, and then it strikes me as a bit disingenuous to say, "Oh, well, that means I'm suddenly no longer leader of the council."
Yeah.
Maybe it had been different if he, you know, the Ken Livingstone thing, which has been cited. Mr. Livingstone had left an event, and he's doorstepped by a journalist.
At his home?
Well, no, it was coming out of
a party
at City Hall, I understand, and it was a publicly funded party. Although I don't think it was open to the public. But a journalist is there, standing on the steps, and starts asking him questions. And we all know that Ken Livingstone and the Evening Standard don't get on.
Yeah.
And you can see a difference there between that and an incident that has already commenced within the curtilage of the event, spills outside,
right.
But because it crosses into the car park, suddenly does it really become different? I think there's a difference. I think there's a difference between the two cases. I'm not saying whether the Ken Livingstone case was right or wrong. I think there's an awful lot to it.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure it can just be relied upon as a, you know, that's the answer.
Yeah.
If you are 1 foot outside the event, you suddenly stop being a councillor. Doesn't strike me as being the correct approach. You look at the entirety of the situation. And make a judgment on that basis.
You requested it went to the Standards for England, as the Standards Board was renamed to Standards for England. Has that now gone back to the Isle of Wight Council?
Well, we that's where we would like it to go, because we think there are too many local sensitivities involved, and we feel it should be considered independently in some way. The procedure is, though, some play was made in the news on Monday with the fact that Standards Board had commented and said, well, we haven't heard anything, and if we had, we'd send it back to them anyway.
Yeah.
We sent it directly to the appropriate person at the council, because that's the way it has to go.
Right.
That's the rule.
Mm-hmm.
We would like it to go onwards and upwards. If nothing else, we feel that it simply deserves an investigation, and just in the same way as an apology might have done in the first place, if it's come to this stage, it just deserves to be brought out in the open, mm-hmm. and sorted out. But we think that because of local seven sensitivities, it's not appropriate that happens on the island.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So yeah, there's a little. It's quite a complex procedure, and there's a little bit of confusion in the procedure. And you know, I'm a new councillor, and I'm learning about this. You know, at the same time as putting this thing on, we're still having training sessions as councillors to find out more and more about the code, and they're important and useful. But you know, I don't think people know the procedure, and I only know it because I'm having to use it.
So what happens now? You've got to put evidence forward, or have you had to do it already, or what's the process on that?
We have to, I think I'm able to say, we've been asked to substantiate the points, we will do so, and then we...
Was that within the next month or so?
No, it has to be the initial screening, this filter process that we mentioned earlier. It has to take place within 10 days of the submission of the complaint, so it has to take place by a week Friday.
Right.
So that's is that 12th? Mm-hmm. And I think the panel is actually sitting on that day, mm-hmm. so we'll submit some further information by early next week in response to a request we've had, mm-hmm. and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, wait and see.
Wait and see.
Well, the other one, we're doing pretty well actually.
Jilly brought up another point. I don't know if you may have dealt with this already, but just talking about the things running on political lines and the block voting, mm-hmm. we see. That I just don't like that in the local council. I agree entirely. I think it's wrong, and that's why I stood as an independent. I don't want to be told what to think by a party organisation.
Well, the opposition bloc voted against the Tories over the budget, didn't they?
Well, this is what I was going to mention, because you've got the independents. If you notice, we have some very independent independents, and it's we don't all sit stand up together or put our hands in the air at the same time.
That was a complete exception, the voting for the budget.
It was, but that was interesting, because Jeff Lumley, I didn't know an awful lot about until I sort of started getting a bit interested in local politics, he made a very impassioned speech. You were there, you saw it, during the budget debate, and he challenged the Liberals, because they do tend to stand or sit together, abstain on block, whatever it is. And he said, look, forget, you know, we're dealing with a budget proposal put forward by Labour and Independent together, and because we thought it was more important than political divisions to actually put forward something that was better, and particularly from my perspective, saving cuts for particularly the homeless and disadvantaged and vulnerable. And, you know, he spun around and said, and if you want to support, act as representatives of your residents, you five will stand up as well, you four will stand up. And they did.
Yeah.
And all credit to them.
Yeah.
And, you know, partly because of that, I stood up, our amendment fell, I stood up for their amendment.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was as good as our budget, but I thought it was better than the one that's gone through.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the ability to do that, and the fact they actually did that, I think that's much better for local politics. Yeah, there may be things put forward by the Tory group that are good for everyone. I'm sure I've voted on some things they've put.
Yeah.
I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I'm sure you know, if they put something forward, something good and valuable and wise, I'd vote for it.
Yeah.
But you should vote for the issue, not for the party.
Right.
And that's, you know, you have to have party politics at the national level. I don't think there's any getting away from that. But on a local level, you don't. And it's
not representing the people that put you there, is it really?
Yeah. It feels like democracy is being stifled in a way if you have too much block voting.
Yeah.
I understand that obviously people are going to kind of come together and try and find consensus
yeah.
to get measures through, but you want to see more than people just towing a political line because without thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's huge, it's people's lives.
Mm.
And we're a small island. There's only, 150,000 of us? So what they do, there is an immediate impact. Unlike, say, Westminster, where it might take a while for the dominoes to kind of fall over and hit wherever it is. Mm. And, you know, I think that having more debate and having people thinking about the issues
mm.
and really thinking, can we do this better, is good for democracy.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, one thing that I've heard fairly recently is people viewing that form of voting as a bit spineless, really. Like, the people, as voting as a bloc, they don't have their own... They're not thinking for themselves. They're just voting in the way that they're being told to vote.
Mm.
And I suspect that anyone who runs as a councillor probably has got... Why would they stand up and potentially take, you know... comments or abuse from people, even on the doorstep, if they don't have their own thoughts? I would have thought pretty much everyone there would have their own thoughts, but by block voting together, some people are viewing them as being like sheep, which that can't be good for them at the time of an election. You know, when it comes round next time, or, you know, when they're knocking on the doors next time, just can't be healthy.
No, I agree. Trouble is, they've got another three and a half years, and I guess some of them must hope the electorate have short memories.
And what is this? Is this... Someone else has floated this idea that you need 5,500 people to come together to say we want to vote about something and possibly a re-election can be forced. Is there anything in that? Does anyone know?
I have no idea. Okay. I think local elections are pretty fixed.
Yeah.
Through my work as a ward councillor, I've come across a situation where there's been some local unrest with a parish or town council, and there is no provision, if the councillors don't wish to go that way, for a re-election of the entire council to be organised. You can have a thing called a parish vote, at which yeah. people can a question can be posed and views accepted on a ballot paper, whatever you call it, and it's then up for that body to take account of it or not. But with local politics, I as far as I understand it, the thing's pretty much set in stone.
Right.
We know, well, within a month or two, when the next election is going to be.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
unless all the council chose to resign en masse or whatever, which won't happen, obviously.
Well, they may block vote that way as well.
There we have it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens next on this thing with the reporting. But I guess the last thing is the other one that it's created before PewTube came about. Huge amounts of comments when we reported it at the Sanders board, which was the parking.
Yes. Yeah.
Huge amounts of comments on that.
Huge comments on it. And then during the full council meeting where they put forward the budget and it was voted through, the council declared that they were going to temporarily scrap the residence parking permit, and that there would be a review of parking on street parking, car parks, etc. And 2 weeks? Is it 2 weeks? It's 2 weeks maybe since the full council meeting. I think it's 2 weeks.
Right.
They announced today that a new island parking permit, long-term parking permit, will be commencing from the 1st of April. Or 2nd
good,
of April.
Good choice of date.
It's 2nd of April, I think.
Is it, right?
It's for parking only in long-term car parks. It replaces the island's island residence permit, and it replaces the island business permit. And it's going to be £500 a year.
Right.
So it's a pretty substantial figure.
And what does that mean? If you're going off the island for work or whatever for the day, then you can park long term in a car park in
Rye. The long term car parks, there are distinctions between different car parks. Some are only short stay car parks, and you can't use it in those car parks. It can only be long stay car parks.
And where are they? They're all over the place, aren't they?
Yeah.
Is that one in Newport that's split between short term and long term?
And you can buy them in different nominations. I think it's 3 months, six months in a year. But it's not surprisingly raising some comments from people.
I mean, how does that differ from... Because they were talking about £500 before, weren't they?
Well, that's for a named car park. That was different.
It's going to be £300 for the named sort of overnight space. And then top that up, as it were, with the proposed 200 daytime one, which would come to 500.
Mm-hmm.
But the general daytime parking permit, which I think is for people who have it, the majority one was going to be 200.
Mm.
But that caused such a furore.
Rising from 75 as it is
rising
currently.
Rising from 75. Yeah. And the problem basically being that it was introduced... they're quite right to say it was introduced at a too low a rate, but for whatever reason, it was...
That's before the election. Two elections ago, wasn't it?
Anti-Saturns. It was kept down too long.
Yeah.
But it's a complete mess now. I don't think this new... I mean, I thought we were supposed to have a review before a new idea came out. I've seen no sign of that. Usually takes the council a lot longer than 2 weeks to review something. My wife works in Newport. She has to take a car there every day and park. She was concerned enough about £200. She just works part-time. She doesn't earn a great deal of money. It makes a person think, is it worth me carrying on with this job? £500, plus the fact that it restricts where you can actually park to, I think it's three car parks in Newport.
Is it?
Which are going to be very full if people take this route.
And full from probably 8:30 in the morning.
Well, most of them are already. But there are also businesses, organisations who have people who need to travel around different parts of the island just to do their work, and they've used these permits and relied on them as a useful tool.
Including council workers.
Absolutely. And now gone. And it will affect the efficacy of some organisations, I think.
Well, that's one of the points that was brought up in the debate, I think, which was charities aren't going to have people volunteering their time if they can't afford a park to be able to volunteer for the charities.
Right.
So as well as the cutbacks for these organisations, they're potentially going to lose volunteers because they don't have the ability to pay for this stuff.
And the other thing is, we're talking, whatever you call it, they've given it a new name and think that we kind of won't notice, but it's gone up from £75 to stay in a long-term car park to £500.
Right.
If you pay quarterly because you can't pay the £500 in one go, it's going to be even more than that.
Oh, the rates are... It's more, is it?
Yeah. So if you look at the numbers, they don't. The quarterly rate does not come up to a quarter of £500. It's slightly more.
Right.
So you're talking about...
It'd be 540, wouldn't it?
566.6%. I mean, that's eye-watering.
How much is it? 566?
566.6% increase.
Right.
From £75 to £500.
Wow.
That's looking at it the best way.
Wow.
And it smacks of just being a backdoor tax.
Right.
I can't see how somebody on a pension or a low income can afford that. So what does that mean? They have to give up their car. Now, a lot of these low-income people, they'll need that for their job. It's expensive to travel on the bus.
There's if you've got a bus route that actually takes you in a reasonable time where you need to start to where you need to go.
There's quite a few places around here, they don't have a bus.
Yeah.
And it's just extraordinary.
Mm.
And I think, I mean, obviously there's the issue, as Jonathan has just mentioned, about commuters and whether they can afford to go to work.
Mm.
But, and I'm going to put my sort of declare interest here. Where I live in Ventnor, I live on a very steep hill. So there's no on-street car parking. It's a single-track road
mm-hmm.
with double yellow lines. And I don't have any off-street parking. So that will, the cost of the increase, I will have to bear. Otherwise, I have to give up my car. There aren't any carrots in terms of Eco Island anymore. That's just gone out the window as a load of hot air.
Yeah.
And the public transport is rubbish.
I think it depends where you live. I mean,
it does, but
cows and like,
it might be better there. Okay. But if you look at Ventnor, we're surrounded by hills. It's very difficult terrain. I mean, I'm aware of other roads in the area where there are homes that aren't even on the road. Mm. You know, you have to get to your house or your flat or whatever by going up a footpath. Now, those kind of people, the people who live there won't have any kind of off-street or on-street parking. Mm. They too, I mean, Ventnor in particular is very, geographically very challenging.
Yeah.
It seemed to me, when I looked at the traffic regulation orders that were being discussed only about a month ago, you know, around here, when you looked at the all of the them collectively, it seems like the number of parking spaces available in Ventnor would be reduced. So they're reducing car parking spaces, they're making it almost impossible for us to run a car. And the people who are fairly well off, who can either afford the fees or afford a property with off-street parking, they'll be fine, and they'll probably stump up, albeit they'll be wincing a bit. But the people who are going to be hardest hit are going to be the poorest. And this is a tax against people who can't afford it, and there doesn't seem to be any thought about, you know, ability to pay. And it's stunning.
I guess they'd say stunning. Having a three-month, being able to buy a three-month one was then being accounting for people who couldn't afford to buy the full year.
Yeah, but they'll end up paying more because if you add it up, they'll pay more than those who can afford to pay the full thing.
Mm.
And you know, I have been lucky enough to be able to pay for my car parking permit on an annual basis. So I pay for to stay in a car park in Ventnor, you know, sort of long term, and to buy. You know, to be able to park in other car parks around the island for whatever the time limit is there. But, you know, I've been in a very privileged position there. And I bought my permit in December. So I'm wondering, what does that mean?
Well, it will be honoured.
Will it be honoured?
We confirmed it today, yeah.
Oh, it will. Well, good news for me. But, you know, for everybody who's I'll still face this next December, and for everybody else along the way, we're all going to be having to stump up or to start saving.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think Jonathan's probably right. You know, maybe the parking was very, very reasonable. Mm-hmm. But at the same time as they introduced this, if you look at the cost, if you bought a ticket in the council car park anywhere, they've been going up. I mean, just in the time that I've been on the island, you know, the cost of a parking ticket for a day or whatever has gone up hugely. So although you could argue that, yes, they have perhaps not earned as much as they might have done by having these rather low rates for residents and so forth, equally, the kind of people who are buying a day, you know, ticket here and there, that's gone up, that's just shot up.
Yeah.
And they haven't had the cost of collecting all this car parking, because it's one permit for a year.
Yeah.
So the admin cost has gone down for looking after a certain group of people.
Mm.
So, you know, it's not sort of as straightforward as they might think. I mean, I gather that when they had the budget debate, they were talking about, you know, that by getting rid of this permit, they would have an extra $750,000 in their coffers.
Mm. It's about 600,000,
But it's not really they're going to get it there. And maybe, Jonathan, I've got a question for you, if you don't mind, because
As long as it's not about geography, I'm
really sure geography. Not about geography, but it's actually about this issue of car parking fees to raise revenue. Because reading around on the blog and elsewhere, it seems that other councils like Westminster have got their knuckles wrapped when they've tried to raise car parking fees to basically bolster their coffers because they've got a shortfall. And I just wonder, is there any sort of legal challenge or a dubious legality to this move on the part of the council?
This is something that actually was mentioned in the podcast last week. John said his reading of the council dropping it was they'd suddenly discovered that it was illegal, and in his mind, the reason they dropped it was that they discovered it was legal and they couldn't do it. So what do you think?
I've got to support the council on this one. There's not an illegality. Yes, parking charges do need to go to a sort of ring fencing, but it's parking, traffic and highways related items. And I did manage to get some figures out of the relevant officer about this. And I think roughly 3 million or so was raised, it's probably a little less than that, through parking charges and related charges, but feeding into a budget of roughly 11 million. So, if you're talking about somewhere like Westminster where there has been an issue, they don't have that much highway to maintain. It's not that big a place,
so they have massive surplus because they take so much through parking.
But they were in a problem because they potentially were raising more than they needed for highways, i.e. the money was going elsewhere. But we're not in that position here.
Right.
So it's a valid point. I think it comes down to this point about clear information and telling people, answering their fears. But we have that cynicism that says, well, hang on, what's been done here? You don't get a clear answer. But there is a clear answer. There's not an illegality.
Right.
Unless they're giving out completely duff figures, but they do seem to add up.
Mm.
And, they'd have to go an awful long way in raising revenue.
Right. So it wasn't the fact of them raising it to create revenue, as long as the expenditure of the department is less than the amount they're making out of parking, then they're okay.
It can't be used to fill a gap somewhere else, but it can be used to go back into that
area. Right. As long as they keep it within their department and don't have more money coming in than they're spending. Right.
But it still comes back to that. It's that idea of looking at the thing in the round, the holistic approach. The parking, you've got to bear in mind, people have been used to being effectively quite lucky in the charges they've been subjected to in recent years. And yes, they should have been going up. They're valid arguments there. And that's why they've dropped themselves in by suddenly raising them by this horrendous percentage.
Mm.
But, they should cope with that better. But I think there's a wider point of just this whole idea of looking at things holistically. Because if people can't park in Newport in Ryde, they won't go to Newport and Ryde.
Yeah.
We've seen somewhere like Ryde look dreadful a few years ago. A lot of shops unused, and there's still a few, but it's changed a lot in the last 10-15 years. Mm. And there's some very nice shops, a lot of sort of boutique places, but they rely on people being able to park for a reasonable time, have a mooch around, and maybe buy something, hopefully buy something, maybe not. But if people have to pay some ridiculous sum to park there, they'll just go to Tesco.
Yeah.
Newport, they'll just go to Sainsbury's. Mm. And it's that wider thing. It doesn't support the high street, which in these days needs every bit of help and support it can get.
Mm.
And I wish there'd be a little more sort of joined up thinking.
Mm. One of the things that John raised last week about the parking charges, because we keep on hearing this, they're very reasonable, £75, very reasonable. The money he was talking about for, he'd done some research in Kensington and Chelsea, which you'd imagine would be a lot more expensive. And it wasn't, was it? The yearly parking.
The yearly parking wasn't.
Yearly parking
but the,
wasn't much
but the
more,
on-street parking by metre
was up to £3 an hour on the metre.
Yeah.
But if you had a residence parking permit, it wasn't that different from the island now at the 75 level. Which, and then, as he said, you know, you can live in somewhere relatively cheap in that borough and go and park in High Street Ken. And still use your... I mean, there's obviously some banded parking around there, but...
I mean, I don't know the place that well, the particular pressures, but I'm sure there's very little off-road parking there.
Yeah.
But it's... I suspect it's part of being responsive to the makeup of your community and who you've got living there and what facilities you've got. And here, there should be more responsiveness to the fact that we've got a lot of people who don't earn a lot of money, a lot of people who don't earn any money, a lot of pensioners, a lot of tourists who are trying to visit the place and spend money and enjoy themselves. And that sort of thing is not being taken account of.
And the other thing is we've got isolated rural communities
with
a patchy public transport infrastructure, which isn't the cheapest in the world. Actually, if you wanted to nip from here to Shanklin, say, which isn't very far, it's quite expensive to do it on the bus.
£3.50, I think.
More expensive than getting in a car.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I know that thinking about the bigger picture, there is an environmental issue that we need to think about wasting fuel, wasting the world's resources with our cars, but this isn't about that. And there's certainly nothing there to encourage us to leave our cars behind. The fact of the matter is that, unfortunately, a lot of us just need them to get the basics of life, to go to the hospital, the doctor, to pick up elderly relatives, or to get shopping that you can't get by walking around your local shops. And I think that the problem with this overall, I mean, part of me actually feels embarrassed about bleating on about car parking charges when, patently, if you look in the news what's been going on the blog, there are other really important social services that are just getting, you know, the black line put through them and get really hard hit. So I do accept, you know, that I will have to, you know, we've had it good and we will have to pay more in the future. I think what's wrong about this is suddenly to put it up so high and take no account of people's ability to pay.
What has a knock-on effect for so many people?
Yes, it's an extraordinary knock-on effect. And I think as Johnson's mentioned, there's just no joined-up thinking here about this.
Okay. Well, we've completely failed to come to the hour.
We were all being too succinct, I think.
An hour and 23 minutes. So next week we will be...
Get the hour.
We will be on the hour. We will. But thank you very much for coming on tonight.
You should offer a prize to your guests.
Yeah. Yeah, creme brulee for anyone who's under an aisle. So thanks a lot for coming on today. And, we didn't even talk about the Gazette. But we will see what's in the Gazette tomorrow. Sounds like it's going to be...
Yeah, I'm sure we'll be discussing
fairly
next
full.
Week.
Yeah, yeah. So, more next week. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
All right.